This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and I'm joined by an improbable co-host who is possibly ready today. It could be today. Is it Dave?
It could be today. It could be tomorrow. It is me, and it is you.
Unless
we're
it's
both
Gen AI.
Here. That's next episode.
No, we have to talk about Gen AI every episode. We have to put up the hype factor, otherwise nobody listens to us anymore.
I'm sorry, yeah, we are obviously in the pocket of big Gen AI therefore continuing the hype around it.
Chilling for the LLM.
Oh, God. All right, moving on rapidly before this descends any further. We are wrapping up our section of sessions, or number of sessions even, on the state of OSS through 2023-2024. And this was a survey done by the folks at Perforce. And we are concluding with the last few glorious graphs that Jon has created for your viewing pleasure on the YouTubes. And the last one, the penultimate graph, is which open source security tools does your organization use today?
And my first reaction is, God, there's a bunch of them.
True.
Now, where is the day that if you want to be secure, you want to have a SIEM or endpoint or anything else that looks at bad things in codes and stuff, repositories and things like that, costs a bucket load of money. I was going to say a bad word, but we're clean tag, so I'm going to have to say bucket. this is a long list, and I'll be honest, I think I know like a third of them, maybe.
I would say that's about fair.
I do know the first the main voted one. That's the one I'm very familiar with.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite. For those watching on YouTube, you're already getting the joke. For those on audio, we'll get to it in a minute. But I think I'm about the same sort of level. About a third of these probably about a third, maybe heading just about towards a half, but probably a third of these I'm pretty familiar with. And some of these I've heard of before, but probably wouldn't accurately describe what they do. But it's the thing that surprises me the most. Let me talk about the thing that doesn't surprise me the most first. The thing that doesn't surprise me the most is the number two being Nmap. It is everywhere. It is the first thing that people seem to whip out when they're trying to do something in this space. It is absolutely ubiquitous and has been around forever, it feels like.
It's a weird bunch of stuff. I don't see all of these under security. I mean, like the Hive is in there. That's a case management thing, right? And sure, you use case management stuff in a security environment, but is that a security tool? OS Query, for example, that's a query tool. Sure, you can use it in the security, but I can use my doorstop in a security solution. Ask that to the burglar. He still has the bump.
The thing that I'm sort of more curious about is, I mean, things like Maven version plugin.
Yeah,
I don't really. I understand why some people might flag it up in security. Like you're trying to find out if you've got older versions of certain plugins and get them updated. And if you don't have them updated, that could be at risk of being a security problem. But
compared to PSN and Suricata, for example.
Yeah. Exactly.
That are security things. Firewall, one hand, network the detection stuff. On the other hand, I mean, that makes sense. But a bunch of the other ones.
So here's one that I think is kind of interesting. And that's the OpenSSF scorecard is actually, it's a reasonably high percentage. Mm-hmm. 7.5% might not sound like a lot. But if Suricata's only down at 5.7%, and things like OSV scanner are down at 6.5%. For OpenSSF scorecard to have got this high, and it's OpenSSF hasn't been, it's probably been around for what, 3 years at this point?
I was thinking two.
I think time flies when you're having fun, so it's probably closer to 3 or 4. But anyway, like it's from something sort of popping out onto the world and already being used by what I believe is quite a wide range of folks that were interviewed for this survey. That to me feels like quite meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that people are adopting it.
Yeah.
So we talked about this on a previous episode. Why this was happening, so I'm not going to rehash all of that, of course, but it does fill a gap, and apparently people are appreciating,
yeah,
which is good.
Yeah. But the big one, the one that is used by the most people, is, of course, I don't know. Ta-da.
Which is the answer you get pretty much every time you ask anybody, what kind of security does your company use? I don't know.
Yeah, unless it's something, exactly, like it makes sense. Unless it's something that's impacting their lives in some way. They've got an agent running on their desktop. They've got something that runs in the background on a periodic basis that interrupts their work or whatever the reasoning may be behind it. Unless they actually see the impact of something, it doesn't terribly surprise me that, you know, 27%, so nearly 30% of people have no idea what open source security tools their organization is using.
And again, of course, due to the survey bias, a lot of different kind of people were asked about this. I'm pretty sure if you ask infrastructure people, they probably have a better idea because they have to maintain this.
Yeah.
But yeah, users, developers, programmers, they are being told by their company, well, they use the company laptop and we will put up an image and it'll be secure. And okay, cool. I don't have to care about that then anymore, which is, I guess, a good thing.
So yeah. And I think you're right. And I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of survey bias and the audience of this survey. In terms of for that particular audience, I think a lot of developers and engineers, that's when it starts to maybe make sense that, you know, CI tooling and, you know, CodeQL and Maven version plugin and Dependabot and other things like that end up in this, because they are kind of, I guess, security tools as viewed by the developers and the engineers on their side of things.
Yeah. Now, for me, the final thing that surprised me was I didn't know Alien Vault was open source.
Uh-huh. There you go.
So today I learned.
Indeed.
Aliens are open source.
Yep.
As long as they're in the vault.
Okay. We won't talk about probing. But we will talk about how one describes the level of open source maturity in one's organization, which is the final visualization.
And it's a bit of an eye chart because there's a lot of information up there. But do remember, I put links to the PDF version of these slides in the show notes. So just go there, clicky, clicky, and you'll have a full screen version.
Indeed. The only sort of real surprise for me is that the last year to this year, and again, I think this is a survey bias thing here, but we'll see. Last year to this year, the number one is still the same, that people are performing security scans to identify vulnerabilities in open source packages. It was, what, 46% last year. It's 39% this year. That sort of makes sense, feels right. There's been a lot of very public noise over the last few years where, you know, there have been security vulnerabilities in certain open source projects, and then people have been rapidly scrambling to figure out, you know, what they need to do there. So I think it's good that people are taking a solid approach here. The thing I would always caveat with performing security scans with open source software is, if you take your software from a vendor that has a distribution based off of an open source project, just because their distribution is based on an open source project that has a vulnerability, that doesn't necessarily mean that that vulnerability is in the version that that vendor ships. Vendors often add additional patches on top of core open source projects to, you know, patch vulnerabilities. And you know, my time at both Red Hat at Canonical with Ubuntu, and also in my time at both Hortonworks and Cloudera, this was a very, very common practice. And just be, I suppose, I was trying to say, be kind to your open source vendor. When you send them, a lot of tools do scanning, and they do very dumb scanning. They do scanning based on reading back a version number and saying, oh, this version is vulnerable to all of these things. Like, if you haven't got tooling actually go and then tests those things, then you're wasting your time, you're wasting your vendor slash partner's time, and you know, you need to get some better tooling, because 99% of the time those things have been long since patched out, and the patches are just waiting to drop into the open source project at some point further down the line.
That is something I haven't seen happen that much anymore. I mean, like 10 years ago, yes, there was this thing about, oh, open source is probably not secure because it's open source. We've talked about the fallacy behind that one, but that led people, companies, to doing vulnerability scanning to the of open source code. And I remember one particular example, we had like a couple of tens of thousands of hits of clear text passwords in code. They were scanning the test code as well. And testing code automatically without adding passwords to the test code is kind of hard.
Yeah, I do remember that particular case, actually.
I thought so.
Oh, dear. So, that one kind of, it makes sense to me. And I think that's something that I think is generally, I think it's a good thing. I think people need to understand their exposure and take that into their own consideration.
If only we're able to do that for closed source software, right?
Indeed. Indeed. But we won't go down that rabbit hole. What we will do instead is, or I will do at least, is last year, the second highest one was contributes to open source projects and open source organizations. And that has dropped to fourth place. And with quite a significant delta in terms of percentage, going from 36% down to about 29%. So, okay, maybe it's not that significant, 5% difference, but the drop in number in terms of order, I think, is quite interesting.
Yeah, but that does kind of get explained by the new number two, the number three, sorry. Has experts in-house. Now, it says for different open source technologies, so I guess people have moved from contributing to building their own?
Maybe, or maybe patching their own. I don't know. But then you've also got, has open source security policies or compliance is, you know, that was third place last year, second place this year.
Which is still
very, very high. Although it surprises me that more people are performing security scans for vulnerabilities than people that have a policy or for compliance around open source. Like, surely you have the policy first, and then you and then you embrace open source.
I don't know. For me, policies are something that are company wide and takes time to get written out, having all the signatures behind it. And in the meantime, we already do the security scanning because we have tools for that. We just do that. So I think there's more the single group of people that are deploying the open source thing, making sure that what they do is secure and okay, waiting for the to finalize whatever policies need to be written. And I guess that's the right thing to do. If you tell me we should wait until all the legalese is written before we actually do something, I would have a bigger problem with that.
Yeah, I think that depends on where you are. I think if you work somewhere like Actually, I'm not going to name them, but a very well-known three-letter-named ginormous organization, sometimes colored blue.
KFC.
has very strict rules and policies around, like, you can't do anything in this particular area until you have certain approvals in place, certain policies in place, and that's been the case for a very long time. But this
is kind of the bad thing between brackets of the open source velocity, right? I mean, policies will always be trying to catch up with how fast this world is changing, and again, having to wait for a policy before you patch a new vulnerability, for example, just to make it very clear. Bad idea. But, well, it does say has policies. It doesn't say has up-to-date policies, so I guess
exactly.
That doesn't work.
Exactly, and that's what really surprises me, is that people don't already have a policy in place. And again, this could well be a bit of survey bias. Mm-hmm. Maybe that organization does have policies in place. These individuals just don't even know that they're in place, which, you know, happens all the time, I think. Something else I want to mention is that last year, organizations, to your point earlier, actually, developing new open source software in public Git repos was down in the bottom third. But this year, it's right around, you know, it's just over the top in terms of, nearly 30% of people, whereas last year it was down at 15%. So that's actually made quite a big shift. More people developing stuff out in the open. That feels like a good thing.
Yes, I would say I agree, but just for to make the podcast a bit more interesting, I'm going to disagree with you. I mean, not because I disagree, but just to have something to talk about, obviously. And I forgot what I was going to say now. I mean, this could also a little bit be the, can I call it a hype? You're only a hip modern company if you have something on GitHub, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely valid.
I mean, also the alchemy behind open source repositories has reduced quite a bit to become a lot more user-friendly. I'm guessing the Microsoft influence has something to do with that as well. Maybe. I have no idea, no proof of that at all. But it has become easier. The landscape, with the infusion of Microsoft's capital in there, it became stable. Less different things happening around in the world. So I guess it got more common knowledge, common thing to do if you wanted to be with the in crowd. You have to have a GitHub repo of something out there.
Yep.
And that, of course, has the negative side that at the moment there's a lot of what's a good word of guard for garbage?
Trash.
I think that's the same, but no, it doesn't make it easier to find good
low
things.
Value, low quality.
I mean, I often now find myself looking for the right fork for a certain thing to get one that's well maintained, because there is a bit of me too grabbiness happening there, which I guess is part of maturing, part of it becoming part of everybody's world, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, something I find very, very dull indeed, but I also understand it's a bit of a necessary evil in a lot of cases, is the ever-present organizations who generate software bill of materials. We talked about this many, many moons ago when we were chatting with the OpenSSF folks. This is becoming more and more important for people to essentially have... not just tracking dependencies at the software level, but actually tracking them at the bill of materials level when they're transacting, which is something I know is a necessary evil, but I do find it terribly dull.
Yeah, I'll first be a developer before I'm a bomb maker.
Fair enough. And then, like, there's the last two sad little elements in both surveys. One of which is people that have inner source projects, and the other one is has an open source program office. And both of those are right at the bottom, very, very low adoption.
I think that's actually the reverse. I mean, I don't mind having has an open source program office at the bottom, because that's something you need to do positive discrimination, if I can use a laden word there. I mean, you needed those offices to make people aware that open source was there and it was good and it was useful. Not needing those anymore is actually a good thing. It means that open source has now been recognized as a normal piece of business, and you don't really need that kind of spokesperson organization in a company anymore. And it has gone down from almost 10% to almost 8% now.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sad about this, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the one that I'm a little bit sad and salty about, though, is the InnerSource one. Because for those that aren't familiar with InnerSource, InnerSource is where you apply open source practices, and for those watching on YouTube, these are air quotes, to proprietary code. And
maybe proprietary code is reducing as well. If there's no proprietary code anymore, you don't need InnerSource.
I just... The whole point, I mean, I don't know. I just think InnerSourcing is... That's just, you're just doing software development. Like, it's not InnerSourcing. It's just closed proprietary software development. Like, yes, you can build communities around it. Yes, you can, you know, encourage collaboration, all that. But if you're just doing it internally, that's just software development. So I have a little bit of a problem with the term InnerSource. And if anyone out there, you know, has experienced in it and can change my mind, I would genuinely love to have that conversation, because maybe I'm not smart enough. Very, very possibly I'm not smart enough, but I just don't get it.
There's a brilliant movie out there called Inner Space. It's probably the same thing.
Okay, so this is where you get code and you shrink it down and you inject it into your body.
It's called the virus.
Got it. Sounds like something Elon would be doing.
Okay, I do have one last thing that I want to talk about, which I'm not entirely sure is a bad thing or just something, but the was again has legal team familiar with open source licensing was at almost 30% last year and has gone down to under 20% this year. I think this is weird, because having knowledge of open source licensing and how it affects your day-to-day business, if you're building software yourself based on open source libraries or if you're just using it, becomes more important, more and more, especially also with the whole AI thing happening. A lot of open source is being built in there, and a lot of legislation is being written around that whole usage of AI things. So having I'm kind of hoping this is survey bias, that they just didn't survey enough legal departments here. But if this is correct, then that kind of worries me a little bit.
I mean, I really do think it's survey bias, because, I mean, please, like, mention out there if you, like, thoroughly disagree, but how many developers know whether their company's legal team is familiar with open source licensing?
I would counter that. I mean, if you're a developer and you're using open source things in the last couple of years, I'm pretty sure you talked to legal a couple of times. And if they didn't know what an SSPL versus a GNU PL versus a whatever PL was, you were very frustrated, so you would have remembered.
I'm not convinced.
Okay. The world's self-proclaimed worst developer in the world.
This is it.
This not is convinced.
It. This is it.
Sorry, using reputation against you. That's not nice of me.
That's okay. I embrace it. Speaking of embracing things, I think it's time we embrace the end of this show.
And the end of this topic.
Indeed. So that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast, this YouTube, this thing, by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, even comment. We've got a response to one of our comments coming up very soon. And do all YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. Please, please also think about sending us feedback. We love to have it and you can send it to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is All Surveyed Out Dave.
And my name is Chief Podcast Maturity Officer Jon.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.